It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Toxic masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get? Is it?
It's likely happening here in Tennessee as well.
A problem.
We can't hide from it.
Sexual harassment is taking over.
It's been going on far too long. We can't laugh it off.
Who's the daddy?
What I actually think she's trying to say.
Making the same old excuses.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys.
But something finally changed.
Allegations regarding sexual assault and sexual harassment.
But she says he's a
and there will be no going back. Because we believe in the best in men.
Men need to hold other men accountable.
Smile, sweetie. Come on.
To say the right thing. To act the right way.
Bro, not cool, not cool.
Some already are. In ways big.
Yo, men, for everyone.
And small.
I am strong.
I am strong.
But some is not enough.
It's not how we treat each other, okay?
Okay.
Because the boys watching today will be the men.
Sandy Rios with you. This is a long overdue discussion that we need to have in depth, and we're going to have it. And that's about what's happening to men in our culture. That was an ad by Gillette that I'm sure every one of you saw, most of you did, that had the undercurrent of the Me Too movement in the background, showing examples of men playing traditional roles. And those traditional roles are described as whistling at girls, flirting with girls, being aggressive, standing around a barbecue pit. Those are the things that form what is known by the cultural left as toxic masculinity. And so the APA, as if on cue, at least the New York Times reported, that they have now issued guidelines to psychologists who treat various types of people, including men, that species known as men. And in those guidelines, they say this: males who are socialized to conform to traditional masculinity ideology are often negatively affected in terms of mental and physical health. So you see, Houston, we have a problem. The men that are our fathers, that are many of our husbands, they are toxic and they must be extinguished. That is that's the message that comes from that ad. And it's the message that's really coming from leftist thought. I've asked Brian Fisher to join us today because Brian has a new book called The Boy to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. You know Brian because he is the host of Focal Point here on American Family Radio. Let me give you more information about Brian, though. If you have not listened to him, by the way, you hear him every day on this show doing his commentary. Brian was a pastor for 25 years in the state of Idaho. He's a graduate of Stanford, Dallas Theological Seminary. He was the founder of the Idaho Values Alliance, and he was the co-author of Idaho's Marriage Amendment. Brian Fisher, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, you're welcome, Sandy. Thank you so much for having me on.
You know, I've got some questions for you before we get into your book here. I want to know what kind of dad you had, Brian.
Well, my father was a great model of righteousness and godliness. He wasn't a warm dad. He wasn't an affectionate dad. But I knew without any question, I never had a single doubt in my mind about whether my dad loved me or whether he was proud of me. I remember he got me a Little League glove, a Bobby Richardson autographed glove for Little League back when we were just as poor as church mice, as the saying goes. And I knew my dad had to sacrifice to buy that glove for me. I think it cost maybe $12, which is like a king's ransom for us. But my dad found a way to get that for me. So I knew without a doubt that he loved me. And then one day we were in the public library, and I had doubled in a game that afternoon, driven in the winning run. And he's telling everybody in the library about that. He didn't know that I could hear him because I was in an adjacent rack. But anyway, I knew that my dad loved me. He was a guy that obeyed God, that loved God, that followed God. He was a pastor for the first part of my life with him when I first came, was born, and was a part of their family. So anyway, he was a great role model for me.
But so what do you think, if you were to sort of write out, maybe you did in your book, what you thought manhood meant, as exampled by your dad, what was that?
Well, be strong. It would be obedient. It'd be a man that has a full heart after God. You know, there were weaknesses that my father had that I did not want to imitate. Everybody's got them. I've got them. Every dad has them. But on the whole, he set an example of, I would say, righteousness and strength and commitment to God above all else.
You know, I do think, I would love your opinion on this, Brian. See, I didn't know your dad was a pastor, so that means you grew up in a Christian home. So I didn't know when you came to Christ, which I do want to know. But my real question here is, I think that there is a real struggle for men, this from my perspective, to maintain their manhood and follow Christ faithfully.
Mm-hmm.
And pastors, too. How do pastors express their manhood? Was that ever a struggle for you?
Well, I had to sort my way through that, and I grew up in churches that I would say had been pretty heavily feminized. My dad was a pastor when I was young, but as I got into junior high school, I went to churches that, in my judgment, were pretty heavily feminized. So all of the masculine characteristics in the gospel have been kind of leached out of the version of Christianity that we were hearing week in and week out from the pulpit. It was all the feminine virtues that were emphasized, the kindness and gentleness and forgiveness and patience and compassion, all of which are terrific qualities. But the other qualities, the masculine qualities of strength, of boldness, of courage, willingness to confront evil where you find it, those were kind of minimized. In fact, when men would sort of act out those masculine qualities, when they would act in a way that was consistent with biblical masculinity, they would be criticized in the church for being cold, for being callous, for being judgmental, for being condemnatory. And so it was difficult for a guy growing up in the church to find kind of his masculinity, because the hint was that there's something wrong about being a strong Christian male, that if a man is a Christian, he's going to be soft. He's going to be characterized by gentleness and compassion, like, period. And so, you know, you look at the example of Christ. I mean, he went through the temple and he cleansed it. It was a physical act of violence. And what I always tell people is, look, if you don't have room in your version of Christian masculinity for a man to do something like Jesus did, then you've got a defective view of both the Bible and masculinity. And most churches and most views of Christianity just don't have a place in them to look at what Jesus did and say, yeah, there's something holy and righteous and strong and courageous and bold about that, and we need to find a way to latch onto that spirit and have that animate us just like it did Jesus.
Boy, Brian, I totally agree with you. I grew up in the church. I became a Christian when I was 9, so it was a big change in our family's life when we started going to church. But then I was part of church culture because we lived there. You know, the rest of my life, we lived there. You know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, Thursday. It was feminized. It was mostly women. I mean, you had the impression that Christianity, you didn't say it, but it was kind of primarily for women because, right. You know, men couldn't fit into that, or men were just men, you know, they couldn't quite find a place there. But I think of an amusing story. This just came to my mind, so I have to tell you. For many years, I attended Moody Church in Chicago, which has great preaching with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, and they had a music pastor whose name in this moment escapes me, but he'd been there for years. He was at Moody Bible Institute. He was the choral instructor, very articulate, very a real tall, slender guy, very just an erudite. I don't know what else to call him. Well, would you believe that somewhere in the course of me being at Moody, suddenly in the headlines, there's a story about the music pastor at Moody who had been at home and the neighbor's daughter was out in the yard and a young man came on and started attacking her. And our music pastor tackled him and hit him and brought him to the ground and stopped him from attacking this girl. And it made all the headlines and everyone was so shocked because they weren't used to seeing him in that light. But my point was he had not forgotten his manhood. He had not forgotten it. And well, he rose to that occasion.
And what you say about the church, I think it drives, a lot of churches just drive men away because they go there and everything seems to be oriented more toward women and toward a feminine approach to life. And the guys wonder, well, I don't know if I really fit in here. I like to hunt. I like to shoot guns. I like to ride ATVs in the wilderness. And it just doesn't seem like that's a part of the kind of Christianity I'm being exposed to here. It's a subtle thing. It may never be made official, but you know, masculine guys just start to feel like maybe I'm not really at home here. And that's, I think, a real problem in the church. That's why so much of the church, probably two-thirds of the church today, evangelical church, is comprised of women. And that's not bad. We want more women in our churches, but we also want more men. And we don't want to do things in the church that drive them away. And I'm afraid that we're doing a lot of that. You know, I think, Sandy, there's a general default view in our culture, especially in the church. But you listen to that Gillette ad, and I think the default view is that men are perps and women are victims. And that default view, so anytime there's a situation where you've got men and you've got women, the default analysis is that the man is a perpetrator and the woman is a victim, regardless of what the setting is. Now, certainly there are cases where obviously men are perps and women are victims, but that's not true across the board. That's not true in every situation. Most men, vast majority of men, are not perpetrators. And you look at that Gillette ad and kind of every guy that's in it, because there's a stereotype that every one of them is deficient. Every one of them is fundamentally flawed. And manhood has to be like eradicated. It's like a birth defect. If a guy's born a male, it's like he has a congenital defect that there's something defective about being a male and about being masculine. So we've got that challenge to overcome in our culture.
Yes, and I want to add that the church is a flawed institution because God calls men and women. I think it's been flawed in the past when maybe men didn't understand the call of women. And I'm not talking about senior pastor. I'm just talking about God speaks and calls his people, and he is gender neutral on that issue. They have different roles, but he calls them. And so the church is flawed in that it does not represent that. God's way is that he calls people regardless of gender. I want to when you think about how we got into this mess, Brian, I want to refer to an article that just came out in The Federalist, which I think is excellent. It's written by Chad Green. And this is one thing that he says. From an endless stream of TV dads portrayed as childless, selfish, lazy, drunk, clownish, and failures to the celebration of childhood independence and maturity, the role of fathers has been largely removed from our media-driven notion of life. We have been encouraged to view dad as humorous but optional, counterpart to our primary parent, mom, who manages to keep our lives running smoothly, most on her own, if not in spite of him. The media today appears surprised at the resulting cultural consequences. My guest is Brian Fisher. His new book is called The Boy to Man Book, and we're going to talk about what Brian lays out and how he talks about masculinity to boys. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think one of the downfalls of society, I've thought about this for a while, is that there's no sort of rite of passage in our world today about this is the moment you become a man. There's no moment where society says, okay, great, now you've done that, your childhood is over, now you're a man. And I think as a result, there's so many people, so many guys, they've never been given permission to be a man and to say like, okay, great, I'm a man now and I need to behave in that way or own up to these responsibilities. And they're left in this sort of perpetual, you know, man-child, grown-up boy kind of life.
We were talking earlier about this social scientist named Brené Brown, right? And when she talks about shame, she talks to this audience of 500 people. She goes, let's talk about men, what makes men feel shame. And she says, if you want, we can all say it together. What is the one thing a man is not allowed to feel? And about 300 of the 500 people at once all say, weak. A man is not allowed to feel weak in our society, and that it often is the source of a tremendous amount of shame.
I feel like as a guy, you can't really show fear because you're judged as a male, so you have to be kind of strong.
I think men can't express sadness because it's emasculating. They, you know, if they show that they can be sad, then they're less of a man. Nobody wants to be less of a man.
Dealing with fear, shame, and grief is something that I think I handle kind of internally. I don't like to make those things external, and I think that that is kind of symptomatic of our society and the way that we've created gender roles. I think that, you know, everyone has a range of emotions as a human being, and I think that you should be able to display them at the appropriate time and not feel like you have to guard yourself and, you know, put on a front.
That's from a YouTube channel called That's What He Said. There's no doubt that men are struggling in our culture to know what it means to be a man. And certainly our boys are growing up confused about this. Brian Fisher writes in his book, The Boy to Man Book, there's a crying need for a strong masculine presence in our homes, our churches, our communities, and our nation today. We have become feminized as a culture, and the muscular strength which is needed to protect our values, our culture, and even our daughters has been bled away. Young women, eager to take refuge under the protection of a strong husband, can't find one. Some even despair and either figure out they will go unmarried for life or have to settle. Where do the men of tomorrow come from? That's in the introduction to Brian's new book, The Boys to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. Brian is a host on AFR Talk. I'm sure most of you know that. He's the host of Focal Point. Brian, let's talk about your book. This book is meant to be read by boys, or fathers and their sons, right?
Yes. In fact, going back to that rite of passage in that soundbite that you played to open this segment, I talk about that. In fact, I've kind of predicated the concept of the book on the rite of passage in the ancient Jewish culture. Even Jesus went through this, called the bar mitzvah. The word mitzvah is a word that means commandment or law. Bar is the Aramaic word for son. So a Jewish male that went through the bar mitzvah was considered a son of the law. In other words, he was treated as if he were an adult. And a Jewish male went through that process between the ages of 12 and 13. That's why Jesus was in the temple at age 12 interacting with the leaders, because at age 12, he was being treated by the culture as a man, as a mature man, as an adult, and he had the responsibility then to keep all of the same principles and the same laws and the same standards that the older males in his culture did. And one of those requirements is three times a year you had to go to Jerusalem for the national festivals. And so that's why Jesus was there in the temple for the first time at age 12. And so that's what I talk about in the book is that, you know, we need to have our sons kind of go through some kind of a similar process where they transition from being boys to being men. And that's what the purpose of the book is. It's designed for boys that are 12 years old. It's designed for their fathers to read to them and to read with them chapter by chapter. They're brief chapters, take 5-6 minutes to read through them. There's a prayer that a father can pray over his son to pray the wisdom of Solomon from the book of Proverbs into the life of his son. I did kind of a bar mitzvah type ceremony with my son when he was 16. I described that ceremony in detail in the book, if a father wants to modify it to do with his own son. But at the end of that little ceremony that I did, I had several of the adult mentors that had played a significant role in JD's life. They came And we signed a covenant with J.D. at the end of that little ceremony that from this day forward, we were no longer going to treat him as a boy, but we were going to treat him as a man, and we were going to expect him to live and behave and act as a man. You know, and you contrast that to what our culture has done, our president, you know, with Obamacare. I mean, there's this prolonging of adolescence, and President Obama did that, and Obamacare were required parents to keep their sons on their parents' health insurance till they were 26, you know, long past the time when a young man who is an adult ought to be taking care of himself, ought to be forging his own path. He's still in some way dependent upon his parents. And so we want a generation of young men that are strong, they're independent, they take initiative, they show leadership, they aren't mama's boys, they're not attached to their mother's apron strings, but they're strong, independent males that are ready to assume their place in our culture as heads of families, as husbands, and as fathers. And that's what the book is about. You know, I wish I'd had a book like this when my son was 12. And so I wrote this book for fathers who, like me, wish they had a book like this when their sons were 12. So I'm writing this as a father for other fathers. You know, somebody asked me in an interview, are you writing this as a pastor for fathers, or are you writing this as a father for fathers? And I said, I am writing this as a dad, and I'm writing it as a father for fathers. And we've had some gratifying responses from dads that have read through the book with their sons. We had one father of an 11-year-old boy, and he called actually a different program on this network, called in and said, look, I just finished this book with my son. He's 11. He'll be 12 shortly. And he got choked up kind of talking about the impact that it had on his son. And then the next day he called my program because we were talking about his reaction. And he said, you know, my boy talked to me this morning and said, Dad, I like that book so much. I'd like to read it again. Can we start reading it again tonight from chapter one? So it's designed for fathers to impart to their sons the wisdom of Solomon. One last thing, I'm kind of dominating this little stretch. But one of the things that motivated me to write this book and base it in the book of Proverbs is that 23 times in the book of Proverbs, Solomon uses the phrase, my son. And it grabbed me one time. I hadn't really noticed it before, but it grabbed me that this is all of the distilled wisdom that Solomon wanted his own son to know as he was on the glide path toward full manhood and full adulthood. And so I use that as kind of a template. Really, the book of Proverbs is designed to be a training manual for fathers on how to raise sons. Here's what Solomon said, the wisest man that ever lived. Here's what I want my son to know. So I tried to distill that wisdom in this book so fathers can transmit the timeless wisdom of Solomon to their own 12-year-old sons.
You know, in your introduction that I read, you point this out, and this is a problem, Brian, and I know that you know it is. You say, young women eager to take refuge under the protection of a strong husband can't find one.
Mm-hmm.
Some even despair and either figure they will go unmarried for life or have to settle. I'm sure you remember that I was president of Concerned Women for America, which means I had a lot of men that worked on staff, but I had mostly girls, and they were smart, sharp young women. And I have to tell you that in Washington, D.C., this was in the early 2000s, it was hard to find, even then, a really strong man mm-hmm. in the traditional sense. I could go on and on about why that is. But there were many of them who were just beautiful girls, hardly ever dated. So that's just one tiny little microcosm. But I think that most people would understand that girls have become tougher. They've been persuaded, even if they're Christians, by the feminist movement. They hold men often in disdain, and men often don't disappoint them because the roles are all messed up. So I want to know, when you write this book and you talk about, for instance, marriage, what do you say? Well, I mean, a lot of guys would say, don't get married early. Don't get married young. You need to enjoy yourself. You know, have experiences with lots of women, and you can always get married later or not at all now. So, Brian, what's the encouragement to men to marry? And is that God's way, apart from the sexuality even, is that God's way?
Well, you know, one of the commands in Scripture is to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And we have not done that yet. About 96% of the surface area of the planet is uninhabited. So we're a long ways from filling the earth. And you look at cultures like Japan, you look at cultures like Europe, look at Russia, their population, Japan, China, their population is shrinking every single year. The population of Russia is dropping by 750,000 people a year. They use abortion there as a form of birth control. And so it's creating a global crisis. So we just simply do not have enough people. You know, places in Europe now are actually paying women to have children because they're so desperate. They're realizing they have aging cultures. They're very welfare dependent. Who is going to be doing the work to provide the resources so we can provide welfare to our aging population? They realize they've got a massive problem on their hands. And, you know, I don't talk about this specific thing in the book, but one of the things I've suggested is that, you know, the instruction of the Lord is to be fruitful and multiply. And he's never changed his mind about that. He's never revoked that command. And you think about what it means to multiply and fill the earth. Well, the average, the replacement rate is 2.1 children. So if couples have an average of 2.1 children, the population will remain stable. But that's not what God told us to do. He said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Well, the only way you do that is by having more than two kids. You know, if you have two kids, you're just replacing yourself. So if you have three kids, then you're starting to get into the multiplication thing where you're leaving behind more people than your own self. And I think we need to recapture that mindset that there's something noble about conceiving children. I talk about this in the book quite specifically, that sex is a great thing. It's not something, it's a great thing. It's one of God's greatest gifts to mankind. There's tremendous pleasure, passion, excitement, the way it bonds us together with a mate. And that sexual energy is designed by God to be channeled into one relationship for your entire life. So I challenge these guys, look, make up your mind right now. Make a decision right now that you are only going to have sex with one woman for your entire life. And then I talk with the boys as their fathers read the book to them about how they can recognize the woman that they are supposed to marry, what you look for, and how. And I've got a kind of a giveaway. I've got a, I don't know, it's a marker that tells a guy when he can know that he's found the right woman. So I'm not going to give it away.
Boy, that's
here.
A tease. Now that is a tease. Hey, let me just stop to say the book is called The Boy to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. And also, Brian, they can get it through the AFR bookstore.
Yeah,
right?
AFAstore.net. Very simple to remember. Where do you go to buy stuff from AFA? You go to the AFAstore.net, and it'll be right there on the website.
Okay, but in regard to marriage, would you not agree that This is the discipline part of it. Marriage makes boys grow up.
Yes.
That marriage causes them to, in the crucible of life, develop the character and characteristics that God wants for them.
Absolutely. You know, just to give you one example from my life, I have always had to work in order for my family to eat. One of my best friends in college and in seminary was a guy that was independently wealthy. His dad had left him basically a fortune. He was never going to have to work again another day in his life. And he lived right across the street from us. And I never once envied that guy because I knew that if I didn't go to work, my family was not going to eat. They weren't going to have a roof over their heads. My kids were not going to have clothes. And I was glad to be in that place. I was proud to be a man who was providing for his family. And that's an essence of manhood. I think you strip it down to two things. It's provision and protection. You know, a man is designed to provide for his family, and he's designed to protect his family, like your music minister did that day with this woman, girl he didn't even know.
Gerald Edmonds, by the way. His name was Dr. Gerald Edmonds. I remembered that later.
Yeah.
He should be identified for that.
Yeah. Well, good for him. And I have a story in the book about something my son did that's similar. You know, because part of the responsibility of men is to protect those who are weaker. And there was a very vivid little anecdote I tell about my son when he was in high school and what he did to protect somebody who was weaker and was being picked on. And that's part of what men are supposed to do, to look out for those that are weak, not abuse them, not ridicule them, not make fun of them, but protect them from those who would mistreatment. That's a part of masculinity as well.
Brian, I'm also thinking, and one more thing about marriage, and then there's so many other things. That's a tiny bit of your book. It's not even a chapter. Is it? Yeah, it is. I think that God, for men and women both, but let's talk about men since this is about men. There's a lot of loneliness in this world, and men are oftentimes very, very lonely. I think that's why they turn to pornography. That's why they... Mm-hmm. They get into a world of their own in various sports and things they're dedicated to. Marriage creates an outlet through sex with one person for life, yes, for intimacy that satisfies, the only thing that satisfies more relationship with God. And it is a pattern. It is a shadow of our relationship with God. And it fills that longing in both men and women when it works the way God has in mind. My guess is Brian Fisher. The book is called The Boy to Man Book. The Boy to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. You can get it at afastore.net, afastore.net. But there's a lot more because Brian has so many chapters on money, on anger, pornography, a work, a speech, all kinds of things. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Oh, hey, buddy. It's your great granddad here. In case you haven't noticed, I'm kind of busy fighting for your freedom in this little thing called the Second World War. But now, you're using that freedom to hurl insults at celebrities on Twitter? Listen, hashtag, you're not gonna fight like a man, at least shave like a man. Excuse me.
Barbasol.
Stop LOLing everything.
Well, that was Barbasol. They came out with an ad to sort of respond to the Gillette ad. I love that. That's just hilarious. And makes the point. Brian Fisher is my guest. His new book is called The Boy to Man Book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. It's a boy. It's a book to read with your sons, and I'm assuming moms can read this too and learn something. Single moms could read something. This would have been helpful to me as a single mother, Brian. You know, I'll tell you a funny story. I remember, I was very aware that I didn't have someone to help me teach him how to be a man. And I was not... And so that wasn't my best job, but I did my best. And I remember when he was about 12 or 13, I told him, I took him out to a restaurant and I taught him how to eat properly and how to pull my seat, my chair out to open the door for me and all of that. And the funny part was he was so resistant. I'm his mother, open the door for you. I mean, I had to make him do that, but I did. And it taught him how to treat a woman. That was my awkward attempt at doing that. But that ad, the Barbasol ad, touches on the aggressive, the physical aggressive, the way God has wired men to be able to fight wars and protect women and all of that. What do you say to young boys about that part of themselves? How can they express that in a positive way?
Well, that was one of the things that was particularly offensive about the Gillette ad, and the complete opposite of the Barbasol ad. And the APA article that you referred to describing toxic masculinity, they use words like stoicism, they use words like dominance, words like aggression, and say, look, these things are toxic in a man. Well, they're not. Masculinity is not toxic. It's necessary. It's healthy. And you think about the dominance and aggression, for instance. Now, they can be misused, obviously. What we're really talking about there is leadership and the use of masculine strength in a constructive, positive way to provide protection. That's nothing toxic about that. That's what men are supposed to be, and it's our men that go off and fight the wars. Now, we have women in the military. Now, whether that's a good idea or bad idea is a topic for another day. But nevertheless, the bulk of our military consists of men, and God has designed them for combat. They have more endurance. They have more stamina. They have greater upper body strength, and it's for a purpose to use that strength to protect the people in our culture that are weaker than they are, the women and the children. Now, there are different ways to use aggression. one of the ways I believe is for a man, he needs to be somebody who is a protector and sees himself as a protector. It could be in school, the example I gave earlier about somebody that's getting picked on, and he stands up to the bullies, gets in between the bullies and the kid who's being picked on, and says, that's going to stop. I'm not going to let you do that. If you're going to do that again to that kid, you're going to have to go through me to do it. That is masculine strength. Somebody has got to be that. Somebody has got to do that. You know, a man uses his strength to protect his family. So he gets in between danger and his family. Wherever the danger is, he gets between the danger and his wife and his children. So there's a noise in the middle of the night. You don't know what it is. It's the guy. It's the dad that gets up to check out that noise. And if there's something there, he's the one that confronts it and not his wife, not the mother in the household. So that's part of what it means to be a man, to sense that God has given me this aggression, this desire for appropriate kind of leadership and dominance for a purpose. You know, stoicism, they downplay stoicism. That's something that's toxic about that. But stoicism is the quality in a man that enables him to keep his emotions in check so he can do the job that he was called to do without becoming so flustered or misdirected that he can't get the job done. So there's a place for stoicism in the life of a man. It's not toxic. It's a necessary demonstration of self-control. You know, Proverbs says at one point that a guy who controls his own emotions, his own anger, he has shown more strength than a guy that conquers a city. And we all know that it sometimes can take more resolve and more self-control to control anger than it does to go to war. So those are the things that Solomon talks about, and those are some of the qualities I try to instill in boys through this book.
Brian, I'm curious because I don't need to tell you this, but I will for the benefit of our audience, that a lot of people that are enemies of our viewpoint on most things who watch and listen to us and really hate us for the things that we say would say to you, now, wait a second. There are a lot of boys that are much more tender. They're more delicate and they're more emotional and they're not aggressive. And so you're making them feel badly by imposing on them this standard that you consider masculine. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say a lot of times the reason boys wind up as those kinds of men is that they've had all the masculinity beaten out of them by our culture and by our society, where things like empathy and compassion are prized as if they are the only qualities of character that count. And so a guy can feel a little bit ashamed if he wants to punch somebody in the face for picking on his friend. He can feel ashamed about that impulse and be told that there's something wrong with that. You know, and I think the other thing is ask young women, what do you want in a man? And I guarantee you, you know, the young single women that you talked about, Sandy, I had them in my church. It was a real problem. Even in my church, I was doing the best job I could to raise a generation of godly young men in my church. But we still had women that were beautiful, young women, single, beautiful, bright, talented, and they just couldn't find anybody in the body of Christ that interested them. But you ask these young women, I mean any young woman, what they want in a man, and you're going to find that it's not going to be long before they're talking about things like strength, yeah, and they're talking about intelligence, and they're talking about leadership. They don't want to be married to a wimp. Women don't want to be married to a wimp. It sounds like they do from the way they speak about men and often treat men, but they want to be married to somebody who is strong, who will be not only a companion, but a protector for them. And that's what we need to try to develop in our young boys.
Well, I, as the woman in this conversation, can say that absolutely. That's very true. I went to a Christian university, Brian. When I was younger, my dad was a real man's man. Fought in World War II. I mean, he had swag. Boy, did he have swag. And honestly, it was very hard for me to find anyone that was of any interest to me. Not because I didn't like them, but because they were not strong men. And I don't mean physically even. So it was a problem even when I was growing up. And I think it's because of the feminization we talked about earlier. I want to change the subject just slightly. This is a quote I want to read to you again from this Federalist article written by Chad Green. And he says, both young men and women have been told for decades to sexually objectify themselves and consider their impulses sacred rights rather than denying themselves through responsible behaviors. The culture has downgraded marriage and the family to, at best, a comic annoyance one grows out of, to, at worst, a repressive and unhealthy, outdated concept that should be rejected. The obsession with celebrating single motherhood as an act of feminist self-determination in a society that views fathers suspiciously as optional caregivers has denied far too many males sufficient role models. But back up to the sexually objectifying, indulging all the impulses. You address those kinds of impulses in your book, Brian. Let's talk about that, because pornography, sex, all of that, that's a huge battle for anybody right now, but especially men.
Well, pornography is a huge issue, even for young boys. That's why I devote a whole chapter to the subject of pornography and urge these guys, do not let this thing get a hold of you. It's a soul destroyer. It leads you to objectify women, and it eats away at your own soul. And I've seen some studies from the UK, for instance, Britain, where in their residential facilities for intensive psychotherapy, 25% of the 12-year-old boys that are in there for an addiction to pornography. So young boys are exposed to this very early in life. We can't just turn a blind eye to it, pretend it doesn't exist. They're going to stumble across it. It's almost impossible to avoid. So what we need to do is give them reasons not to get hooked on it, not to get addicted to it. And part of that is this determination to save my sexual expression for one woman for the rest of my life. You know, and part of it, this is kind of another topic for another day, but we have, I think, arbitrarily delayed the age of marriage. I mean, it's getting higher and higher every year. The average age now for first marriages for boys is around 28. For females, it's around 26 or 27. And it ought to be, it actually, in my view, ought to be much, much younger. I think God knows what he's doing in the way that he made our bodies. And when we start to develop the ability to sexually reproduce, it's probably not too long after that that a smart culture would be thinking about preparing these kids to enter into marriages. Now, that would be late teens. And we'd have to completely retool our culture to get to that place. But I think we have artificially delayed marriage, delayed the opportunity for males and females to engage in legitimate sexual activity. And so when you artificially delay that, you have this longer period of time now where young men and women are struggling with hormones, they're struggling with their sex drives, they want some kind of outlet for it. And it just can be terribly frustrating to them if it's years and years and years before we tell them, well, now it's okay to get married. So, again, that's a topic for another day. But it does take self-control. You know, we don't want our young boys to get addicted to pornography. It can happen, as we see from the UK. So I've got a chapter on that about stay away from that stuff. You know, if you dabble in it, just do not get hooked on it. God will always forgive you. Don't dabble in it. If you do slip, God will forgive you, but don't get hooked on it, absolutely.
Brian, before we run out of time, say a bit about what you think God requires of young men in regards to work and financial responsibilities.
Well, you know, God designed men for work. I believe he designed women to be nurturers. He designed men for work. You find that in the book of Genesis. He put the man in the garden to work and to care for it. In chapter 3, the role of Eve is centered about her family, and the consequences of the fall are felt by the man in his work. The ground will produce thorns and thistles for you. For the woman, the impact of the fall is felt in her family. I will increase your pain in childbearing. You will desire for your husband, but he will rule over you, kind of an abusive leadership type thing. So God has designed men for work. We see that in Genesis, and that was before the fall. You know, he didn't put Adam to work after the fall as a consequence of sin, but before the fall, because God has designed us to do that. He's designed men to go to work. A man is not going to be fulfilled in his masculinity and manhood without finding something responsible to do with his talents and with his abilities. And part of that is to provide for a family. The other part is to use his skills in the world to make a difference, to show initiative and innovation and make the world a better place, make his business more successful, more prosperous. All those are things that men are designed to do.
Do you think that churches have dropped the ball in not intentionally training young men and young women? And like Boy Scouts sort of took the place for a long time. they're no more, you know? But Boy Scouts sort of taught boys how to be men.
Yes.
Should churches be doing this more purposefully and maybe having ceremonies like the like our Jewish brothers, the bar mitzvah? Should we have had something like that all these generations?
Yeah, I believe we should have. I believe we should be very intentional about this. You know, I think churches wait way too long to start discipling young men in maturity. I mean, a lot of high school groups are mostly just kind of fun and games and retreats and parties and things like that. Nothing wrong with those things, but where is the intentional effort to turn these boys into men? Not just turn children into adults, but turn boys into men. We want to turn girls into young women. That requires intentionality. Where I think we've really dropped the ball is not being intentional about turning our boys into men, and that's why I've written this book.
All right, so Brian Fisher has been our guest. And by the way, Dr. Jeffress has wonderful things to say about this book, as do the other people. It's brand new, so we've had great feedback already. The Boys to Man book, Preparing Your Son for Manhood. You can get it at afastore.net, afastore.net. And this would be just a fabulous tool for your grandson, for your son, for your neighbors, and for your pastor, for your youth pastor. So, Brian, you've lived a life of muscular manhood. You've been a great example of this on your program. People love you. Focal Point, by the way, on AFR Talk. Brian Fisher, thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.